Panel presented is Megan Lindley from the Immunization Services Division, Centers for Disease Control.
Okay, good morning. Today I'm going to present the preliminary results of a pilot test for a standardized measure of healthcare personnel influenza vaccination. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors from CDC and the state and local health departments that are collaborating with us. And I don't have to call anybody out because I actually do have several co-authors in the audience and on stage, so thank you. Standard disclosure. So a little bit of background for this project. Several organizations recommend measuring healthcare personnel influenza vaccination as a national quality measure. A study conducted in 2006 showed that there's a substantial lack of uniformity in the way hospitals in the U.S. measure vaccination rates among healthcare personnel, specifically what types of groups are included in the vaccination rate, whether they include their students, volunteers, contract workers, et cetera. And we know that beginning in 2007, one of the Joint Commission standards for accreditation requires hospitals and long-term care organizations to establish an annual influenza vaccination program that includes an annual evaluation of vaccination rates among their staff and licensed independent practitioners. And that is something, if people heard the presentation yesterday, that the Joint Commission is currently working on updating. The National Quality Forum is a nonprofit organization that develops consensus-based healthcare quality measures. And the NQF recently issued a time-limited endorsement to a CDC-sponsored standardized measure for reporting healthcare personnel influenza vaccination rates. I'm going to abbreviate that as NQF measure throughout the rest of the presentation. And the NQF measure is designed to ensure that reported rates of healthcare personnel influenza vaccination are comprehensive within any individual institution and comparable across institutions. So the objectives of our pilot test were to determine the feasibility of implementing the NQF measure in a variety of healthcare institutions and to identify barriers to and facilitators of implementation. A brief overview of the methods. As I noted, CDC is conducting this test in collaboration with four states and localities, and we initially recruited 323 institutions to participate, which included 92 acute care hospitals, 89 long-term care facilities, 51 dialysis clinics, 30 ambulatory surgery centers, 56 physician practices, and 5 other outpatient facilities. And our primary means of collecting data is through 3 web-based surveys conducted last November, January, and then one that will be conducted next month. The type of data that we're collecting in the survey, we did ask for basic information about the characteristics of the institutions and their influenza vaccination programs for healthcare personnel. We asked what their processes are for collecting data on healthcare personnel influenza vaccination. We asked them about their perceived barriers to reporting vaccination rates using the NQF measure, and the questions about barriers were developed based on key informant interviews that we conducted among a convenient sample of our participants at the beginning of the project. And finally, we asked them about aggregate vaccination data and the number of healthcare personnel working at the institution. And these are cumulative reports, so the final data for the influenza season will be reported to us in next month's survey. So just do keep that in mind when I show the results. There's more to come. So since the numerator and denominator that comprise the vaccination rate are one of our primary outcomes, I'm going to define those a little more carefully. Our denominator is meant to be quite comprehensive. It's all paid and unpaid healthcare personnel working full or part-time for at least one day during our defined influenza season, which was October 1st, 2010 to March 31st, 2011, aka tomorrow. And the denominator is reported in 3 mutually exclusive groups: employees, which is anybody who receives a paycheck from the institution, regardless of their patient care duties; credentialed non-employees, who are licensed or credentialed practitioners affiliated with the institution but not paid by the institution. And the best example of this is probably physicians with admitting privileges at a hospital. And then other non-employees who are other personnel affiliated with an institution but not paid by the institution. And this could include everyone from contract laborers to students to volunteers to construction workers, et cetera. Our enumerator is also reported in mutually exclusive categories. There are healthcare personnel who receive influenza vaccination at the healthcare institution, those who receive influenza vaccination outside the institution, healthcare personnel who are determined to have a medical contraindication to influenza vaccination, and those who decline influenza vaccination for non-medical reasons. And so those first two categories would make up the vaccination rate for a facility. This is just to give you a quick look at what our data collection tool looks like online. We've got the denominator data on top, the numerator data on the bottom, and then three separate columns for each of those three denominator groups, the separate healthcare personnel groups that I mentioned. So our results, again, I want to emphasize these are preliminary. Our cumulative response rate to our first two surveys is 81%, so we've retained 261 healthcare facilities in the pilot. And as you can see, we've done a pretty good job of maintaining our distribution of different types of facilities. Because there's a huge amount of data from this pilot, we decided to focus on presenting the results at the institutions that would have the patients at highest risk for complications from influenza. So I'll be presenting data on the hospital, long-term care, and dialysis clinics. So looking very quickly at some institutional characteristics, you can see the majority of our facilities in each category are private, for-profit, or not-for-profits. Over half, about half of each, are located in urban areas, and the rest are evenly divided between suburban and rural sites. And the vast majority of all of them, including 95% of the hospitals, have offered influenza vaccine to their healthcare personnel for at least 5 years. Their experiencing and measuring the healthcare personnel influenza vaccination is a little more variable. If you look down in the first column, you can see that over half of the hospitals have already been measuring healthcare personnel influenza vaccination for at least 5 years, and a substantial portion of dialysis centers and long-term care facilities also have. But nearly a quarter of the dialysis clinics and nearly a third of the long-term care facilities have never measured influenza vaccination. We also asked about their vaccination policy for healthcare personnel, and over 70% of hospitals and long-term care facilities require declination statements for healthcare personnel who elect not to receive influenza vaccination, whereas the largest category for the dialysis clinics was simply recommending vaccination. And no institution reported a mandatory influenza vaccination policy that was enforced by termination. This slide shows a little bit about the burden of reporting using the NQF measure. You can see that for the majority of these facilities, only one person, whether it was the survey respondent or another person, was doing the data collection specifically for this pilot. However, in 23% of hospitals and 14% of dialysis clinics, six or more people were collecting data. So there's some substantial personnel time going into this. We did ask about the median number of hours spent on collecting data for the last vaccination report, which ended December 31st. And you can see that the median number of hours reported is substantially higher for hospitals. However, a large proportion of all facilities were unable to estimate how much time they spent, so it's unclear how meaningful that data is. This graph shows the perceptions of the measure by the healthcare facilities. The bars represent the proportion who agreed or strongly agreed with statements about the data collection tool, such as that it was easy to use, it was comprehensive, the definitions were easy to understand, they felt it was relevant to their healthcare facility, and they would recommend use of the tool to another healthcare facility. So overall, you can see that there's a fairly positive perception of the tool. However, that positive perception does not mean that it's necessarily easy for them to use. This slide shows the proportion of facilities who reported that it was not easy or not at all easy to count healthcare personnel in the different denominator categories. The red bars represent employees, and you can see that it's relatively easy for them, of course, to count their employees. But when you look at the green and yellow bars, which represent the non-employee groups, there are a substantial proportion, particularly among hospitals, who have difficulty even counting those employees, those healthcare personnel, The next two slides show major barriers to reporting healthcare personnel influenza vaccination using the NQF measure. And the bars are those who reported a major barrier versus somewhat or not at all a barrier. The blue bars are hospitals, yellow are dialysis clinics, and the red are the long-term care facilities. So I know there's a lot on here. I think if you look at the top two bars, which are the time to collect data on other non-employees and the time to collect data on credentialed non-employees, you can see what's sort of the trend for all of the barriers, which is that hospitals and long-term care facilities are reporting that these are major barriers to using this measure in fairly substantial numbers, whereas the dialysis clinics are reporting that with somewhat less frequency. And we also asked about the third item, inadequate existing process or system to track healthcare personnel, and the sheer number of other non-employees and credentialed non-employees at the institution is also a barrier, particularly for hospitals. This slide is set up in the same way that the previous one was. And so if you look down at those bottom two categories, determining the vaccination status of the two non-employee groups, again, you can see, especially among hospitals, where nearly half of them are reporting that determining the vaccination status in these categories is a major barrier to using this tool. And again, the long-term care facilities also tend to report that with some regularity, and it's somewhat less of a problem among dialysis clinics. And those lower barriers are probably in part because the dialysis clinics tend to be smaller. These pie charts show the median number of healthcare personnel reported at each of the three types of institutions, and it may be difficult to see the white numbers in each pie is the median, and then you can see that the gray is the proportion that are employees, and the purple slices are the non-employees. So the basic message here is that hospitals are larger overall and that a fairly substantial proportion of their healthcare personnel are non-employees compared to the other two types of facilities. So these reports show the difficulty reporting the denominator. This is sort of the quantitative data that goes with that slide about how difficult or easy it was for them to count their denominator groups. The first line, you can see that only one hospital that's actually still getting their data, and none of the dialysis clinics or long-term care facilities were unable to report denominator data for their employee. Conversely, 16% of hospitals couldn't report data for their credentialed non-employees, and 14% of hospitals and 12% of long-term care facilities couldn't report on their other non-employees, and that's simply they couldn't give the number working at the facility. So given that difficulty, it's not surprising that our facilities also had some difficulty reporting the numerator data, which would be the vaccination contraindications and non-medical declinations. The slide is set up in a way that's slightly confusing. The range represents the range of the reports in each category for employees, credentialed non-employees, and other non-employees. So in each case on this slide, the bottom of the range is the response that they gave for employees. And the top of the range for hospitals, it's the credentialed non-employees that they were least able to report. And for the other two, it's the other non-employees. And I think the most interesting thing about this slide is, for example, if you look down at the first column at the hospitals, 17%, 18, 19%, 21% are not able to report data on employees who are vaccinated outside the institution, contraindicated, or declined. And that's among their employees that they should have excellent track of. So, and that trend is repeated less so among the dialysis because they're smaller, but again among long-term care. So there are some really substantial challenges to reporting this data. So most healthcare institutions, as we just saw, can provide data on employees vaccinated at the institution. And when we looked at our data, which I didn't show you because it's preliminary, that actually was the majority of vaccinations that we got reported. Reporting vaccination data for non-employees is challenging for healthcare institutions. Part of that is that we did encounter some divergent interpretation of our definitions within and between pilot jurisdictions, particularly for what is a credentialed non-employee. And finally, the ability to report healthcare personnel vaccination data using the NQF measure varies substantially by the type of healthcare institution. As we saw, the dialysis clinics tended to feel that they had lower barriers to reporting. The next steps for this pilot, as I mentioned, our final data collection survey is going to be fielded next month, launching on Friday. We'll have a validation phase where we use multiple methods to verify the validity and reliability of our vaccination data in each of the separate groups. We'll present the measure to NQF for a possible full endorsement, and the measure will be modified before we present it based on what we learn in this pilot about what's possible for facilities. And finally, the National Healthcare Safety Network that is also run out of CDC is going to develop a module for aggregate reporting of healthcare personnel influenza vaccination based on the approved measure. The potential impact of this project, the first obvious outcome would be the availability of a standardized feasibility tested measure for healthcare personnel influenza vaccination, and this is something that could be very useful for voluntary reporting initiatives, like one that's conducted among hospitals in Iowa, and also for institutional and state reporting requirements, which are becoming more common. This would allow them to make sure that their results are comparable among facilities and year over year. And some measures that in the past that are fully endorsed by NQF have been adopted for use in national healthcare quality reporting requirements. One example of that would be CMS's Hospital Inpatient Quality Reporting Program. And this is also a measure that could be useful for the Joint Commission standard that I mentioned earlier. I'd like to acknowledge the contributions of our steering committee and our pilot jurisdictions, particularly because they've put an immense amount of work into making this pilot happen, and my colleagues at CDC. And thank you very much.
Okay. Ray?
Yeah, Farouk, can I ask each of them a question?
Sure.
All right, I'll try to make this quick. Tiffany, do your colleagues participating in your initiative for the vaccination program report their data on either flu or any of those vaccinations on their website or on a state health department website? Is it publicly available?
It is not publicly available.
Is something you've discussed or no?
Well, they're not very impressive. I don't know if people would.
Well, the influenza rates, I would hope, would be tolerable.
Some of the rates range from like 15% of their healthcare workers all the way up to about 95-98%. So posted on some state websites are the vaccination rates, the flu vaccination rates of acute care hospitals. But in terms of like a private doctor's office or a dialysis center wanting to post their, you know, 27% vaccination rate, I don't know that we could get them to do that, but it might be a way to get their attention.
Yeah, it occurs to me is public displays. I'm going to say public shame is a good idea.
Well, actually, one of my partner in crime thinks that we should probably post. She wants to shame people, but I think we're kind of easing into that because in our toolkit this year we did list the top performing hospitals. So. There's
okay.
Probably movement towards that.
Question for Dr. Williams. You may not have been at Monday's Q&A session where my colleagues from CDC sat up there when we were fired at about when is CDC going to figure out a policy for these people who come to either healthcare employment or healthcare studies and they were vaccinated against hepatitis B remotely, and apparently most institutions that pay for paid employees are, you know, if you were vaccinated remotely, even if you can document you got three doses, they're bleeding them. And then they're doing, you know, one or three doses. So it begs the question, are you and your colleagues considering a policy about people vaccinated remotely who are coming to healthcare institutions? And so what do you do with them? Would you suggest they bleed all of them and then do something to do with boosters? Would you simply say, as has been sort of the mantra for years ago, if you can document three doses, you're immune? Because if you boost them, the vast majority will show an anamnestic response, which you demonstrated. So I'm just curious about the status of any policy change or not change, but statement about those types of people that you studied, and that is a large question amongst these folks who work in healthcare institutions.
Thank you for the question. So indeed, CDC is further exploring that. So in addition to my study, there was a second study done at Emory, which there's a poster on here. But this question has, as you said, come up several times. And so colleagues at CDC and with ACIP are trying to answer that very question, not just for those that were vaccinated remotely, say for my study this was in adolescence, but
yeah.
even more so in the next 5 years, we'll see the birth cohort group,
right.
and we really don't have any information on that, but it definitely is in the forefront of CDC and ACIP policy in terms of trying to see what recommendations to make as more data becomes available on that.
All right. Just as people are clamoring for the data. Mm-hmm. Megan, I should know this because I'm participating in your project, but it occurred to me as seeing you nicely describe this, saying, okay, there's all this trouble identifying denominators, particularly numerators. Could you envision, or has it been discussed, maybe I've been asleep during the meetings, that maybe we should just limit this NQF measure to employees that are paid because it's the easiest group to do, and even it's tough? Or has there been, I mean, has that been brought up, and again, maybe I've missed it, to make it a little more realistic, or should we go for the whole enchilada and do all three types of people who are in the facilities?
I'm not sure that we've brought it up yet, just because we're waiting for the final results. Obviously, when I say the measure is going to be modified before we submit it to NQF, if we can't demonstrate feasibility, they're not going to endorse the measure, so we are going to have to keep in mind what it is they can do. I think it's difficult because if you condense the measure to what they can do now, it's employees vaccinated at the institution. And you can see for hospitals, you could potentially achieve a very high rate and still have 25% of the people with potential patient contact wandering around unvaccinated. So, yes, we're going to have some very interesting discussions.
No, I agree. Yeah, Joint Commission is saying everybody, and it's saying, well, the NQF measure might say, well, let's phase it in, for example. Let's do employees now, and we'll do the others in 5 years. So you're on notice to do it, but we'll talk about it. Thank you.
If I can just add one other thing to your question. One of the aspects that's right now also being considered is the cost effectiveness. And so that, is, you know, in terms of weighing, having a requirement for anti-HBS testing for, you know, all employees within healthcare versus if they've come with a vaccine record, do we still test them? So that also is part of what ACIP is considering and working on right now.
Megan, in terms of the data collectors, were they trained? And if they were or if they weren't, are you considering developing some type of curriculum for later on, for later purposes where we are all on the same line, using the same definition, and have the same data at hand?
That's a great question. The data collectors, each of our pilot jurisdictions developed their own training and provided that to their facilities via mm-hmm. webinars or conference calls, that kind of thing. So that means there's some variability in the training, but I believe all of them at least had the opportunity to receive training. Whether they took advantage of that, we're not sure. And it's true that we may need to think about developing some kind of uniform training as the measure goes forward.
And for the doctor, in terms of our healthcare professionals, what happened to those that refused to get immunized?
And have no proof of immunization?
No proof. They figured they're here as a student. They are professional. They could take care of themselves. They don't need to get bothered. I think that's a big problem in mandatory vaccination. And especially, I'm from New York, and we heard about the problem that the nurses had in terms of getting mandatory vaccination. And if you carry on to the healthcare professional, the student and all, Where's the border? Where's the stopping sign where, you know, people could determine when they need to get vaccinated and not?
Well, I guess I'm not quite understanding your question. If it's a requirement and they're refusing,
yeah.
Because it, say in my healthcare setting prior to coming to CDC, it was not a requirement, but it would be up to the institution's I guess policy, but generally it's not necessarily a requirement by all healthcare institutions, but certainly if they decline getting the vaccination, as has been the case, say, with patients that I have treated and have a documented declining of that vaccination, then they would have to know that they're still at increased risk and be counseled to definitely seek medical care if they are exposed, because at that point would then become the next time for some intervention to be done. At your institution, what is the policy if they decline? Are they just not hired, or?
No, we don't have a policy of mandatory.
Okay. At most sites, as far as I know, it's not that it's mandatory, though it's strongly recommended. And if it's declined, the next step is then to basically discuss exposure and getting counseling and testing at the time of exposure.
Again, the reason I say so is because as a health professional, you know the risk factors.
Right. Certainly.
Good morning. I'm Allison Green with Dallas Fire and Rescue. And the reason for my coming up here is the idea of putting it to you that you may also want to consider pre-hospital health providers such as the EMTs and the paramedics in your mix. From what I'm seeing is we're missing that particular component because our folks are truly exposed, so are our police officers. And I wondered if there was any studies that are moving into that area or encourage you to move into that area too, because that's a large branch of providers. Not necessarily a question, just putting that out there.
I actually have a question for Tiffany. You mentioned that you give out funding. What's the source of your funding? How do you generate the funds?
We'll just take it from our budget. So we have a partnership with the State Health Department, and we get a grant from them every year. And every year we develop a strategic plan, and we indicate how much we want and what we're going to use it for. And we always have provisions for the healthcare worker grants.
Okay.